And good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk for Friday, January 15th, 2021. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you with us once again. Thank you for joining the program, MarketTalkAg.com. And also, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all by searching at Market Talk Ag. Our great radio affiliates across the country, I like to say, from the Dakotas of Minnesota down to Texas and everywhere in between, throughout the heart of the country, we have a lot of great affiliates joining the Market Talk family and bringing you content from Market Talk. We thank them for being part of the program. Got a loaded show here for this Friday. Two different guests joining us. A little later on, we're going to get an update from the Swine Health Information Center with Dr. Paul Sundberg, catching up on things like African swine fever, PERS, hearing some PERS outbreak rumors in the U.S., and also a look at their 2020 progress report that they just released this week. But first, our guest joining us to talk about the markets. He was on a few weeks ago. Really appreciate his insights into the market trade. He is with Agricultural Economic Insights. David Widmar joins us here on Market Talk. David, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be on, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
David, we've seen a lot of change since the last time you and I talked throughout this commodity market. And I think just first, I'd like to get your overall impression of where things stand now that we have the January USDA reports out of the way. And we've seen this meteoric rise, so to speak, in soybeans, corn, wheat futures. Just what is your overall thoughts on where this commodity market stands right now?
Right. So we've seen a big shift, and it's very interesting to think about where we were 6 months or 8 months ago. And 6 to 8 months ago, the conversation was, man, nothing can seem to go right. And now the sentiment's almost nothing can go wrong. We've had strong usage. We've had production coming in from prevent plant, but also yields coming in lower than what we thought. So, you know, we look at the corn situation today, and it's, you know, threatening to cross that 10% line. It's above the line, right? But it's well below what we consider a 20-year average of what stocks to use are. But it's also well below that 20-plus percent ending stocks to use that we were just back in May. So when we think about, you know, where we've come from and how significant the shift has been, a lot of things have gone in a favorable direction for us. But I don't think a lot of us would have assumed this outcome was possible given the information we had. So things have clicked and gone our way, but it's really interesting to step and look back at how much things have shifted and how much unusual activity it took for that to happen.
Well, let's talk about some of that unusual activity. Let's focus on corn first and USDA, you know, some of those surprising numbers dropping acreage. We've continued to see good export pace with corn. Corn remains, you know, the cheapest in the world. We're seeing South American weather challenges. And yeah, corn market finally breaking through that $5 kind of psychological barrier almost we had. And I think a lot of producers who are looking at their marketing decisions for, you know, whatever crop they have left in the bin from 20, but also looking here to 2021, 22 even, there's a lot of opportunity for profit out there in corn right now. And it seems like corn, a lot of folks are maybe more optimistic with corn than soybeans right now. What would you say to that?
So the first thing I'm challenging folks to think about is assume you have 10 points, okay? And I need you to allocate those 10 points between a supply story or a demand story. And think about corn. So how much weight are you going to put on this being a demand story for corn versus a supply story? And then think about that for soybeans. And, you know, so everyone should do their homework. Is this, you know, 9 points on supply and 1 point on demand or other way around? And when you get through that exercise, I want to stop back and remember and help you think back to that. We were going to plant 97 million acres of corn last spring. That was the best estimates from the USDA. And now we came in somewhere around 91 and trimmed that maybe just a little bit. Here are the latest data. So what happened was we had another big prevent plant year. And so the U.S. ag factory just didn't produce as much as it would have under normal operating procedures. And so that's that level of luck. So sometimes we come in above normal, sometimes we come in below normal, and this was a below normal year. And that's really important, I think, as you start to make your decisions for 2021 and 2022. Now, there was a demand story. Obviously, China is a huge part, especially in soybeans. But we have to be concerned, or we should at least pump the brakes about this narrative of demand, because demand narratives really warp our decision making and a little more than maybe they should. And I'm not saying, you know, that's a wrong thesis to follow. I'm just saying, consider how you might proceed if it was 100% or, you know, all those coins, those points went on a supply story versus all those weights being on demand story. And I think right now sentiment's putting a lot of weight on a demand story. That's, and maybe more weight than was warranted, but there's also supply story. So I think the U.S. agricultural factory is going to plant more acres, especially if Mother Nature, you know, cooperates. We're going to see more acres of corn and soybeans together planted. And I think that's really important to recognize as we think about how we're going to go up. We're going to roll the dice again for weather, but, you know, 6 years out of 10, we have above trend yields, and we've had below trend yields this year and last year for corn. Now, your second question, optimism for corn versus soybeans. You know, the soybean price ratio, the soybean divided by corn price ratio, we did some work looking at crop budgets, and it's kind of off the charts favoring soybeans. And so there's a strong signal to plant soybeans, especially for the new crop. But I think you're right, Jesse. I think a lot of producers are optimistic about this corn story. And so I think producers have got to sort of step back and say, what's the price ratio today? What are my expectations of what that price ratio might be when I go to market? And they got to put in their own cash basis. So I think corn bases have been really strong, so that's going to tilt the scale a little bit to corn. I think producers also know that they can make a lot of money on corn. So corn has what we call operational leverage. And so when things go well and you're able to make a lot of money, corn's that crop that's going to help you make a lot of money. So soybeans is a little safer crop for the downside, but it limits some of your upside potential too. So I think that acreage battle is going to be key. I think soybeans are going to come out fighting strong. But I think, like you said, producers on the margin are going to be thinking about, I'm optimistic about corn because of all the factors that are out there. How can I make sure I'm still in the game to make big money on corn if that's an opportunity to pursue?
And we can't forget about that acreage battle as well, David, and looking at South American weather challenges with their crop and how that could play into our planting decisions here this spring. And you mentioned, you know, soybeans really going to be fighting for that acreage. Wheat as well going to fight for acreage, it looks like. Corn, it's going to be a big story the next few weeks, next few months ahead. And I'm wondering as well, you know, we're hearing some long-range weather models about maybe dry weather in the Midwest this summer. We know with soybeans, that carry out, that pipeline, that supply is really, really tight. The tightest has been in a very long time. I don't remember the exact number here off the top of my head, but really this acreage battle is a bigger deal than I think even people are really making it out to be. They're making it out to be a big deal, but it seems like it could be even bigger than we're being led to believe it is.
So I want to take your analogy of an acreage battle, and we've been writing about this a little bit. I think it's more like an acreage war. And why this is different is that a battle is sort of between A and B. But in this acreage war 2021, it's going to be corn and soybeans trying to get more acres amongst the two of them. So let me back up a little bit. The last 5 or 6 years, the battle has been who is going to get stuck with all these acres, right? Think about last year, 97 million acres of corn. Everyone doubted that, right? But the idea was, okay, if we're going to drop those corn acres, where are they going to go? And it's like, oh man, soybeans don't need them. And so that's this sort of back and forth that we've been seeing in that acreage battle. The shift here is, you know, how many acres of corn? So we have a question in the Ag Forecast Network. So here's something to think about. What's the probability of the U.S. planting more than 91 million acres of corn? So everyone should write down their answer. The probability of more than 91 million acres of corn based on that June WASDE, that June acreage report. Second question, what's the probability of the U.S. planting more than 91 million acres of soybeans based on that report? Okay. Now, I have above 50% probability for both of those. But where I really rack my brain is, how are we going to plant more than 182 million acres of both of those, right? How do we get enough to satisfy both of those? Because you can easily make an argument that soybeans need 91 million acres and corn need 91 million acres. You know, if you assume trend yields and trend line usage, you want to grow ending stocks off these very low levels, you're going to need more than 91 million acres of both. But how do you get that to happen for both? In that USDA winter wheat report you mentioned said, hey, by the way, we're planting more wheat. so that the amount of acres that are available at this point have been limited. So we're going to look to cotton. Maybe cotton's going to give up some of their acres. I think the price ratio is not as advantageous for cotton. Spring wheat's probably going to lose some acres, but also it's winter wheat. That dryness could lead to some producers giving up on the crop. It wasn't that long ago that the input manufacturer was saying, hey, if you buy corn, we'll give you the Roundup to kill your wheat crop for free. So this is this acreage battle thing that you mentioned. I think there's a lot of shifting things that could happen. The market's going to continue to send us signals, especially when we're at the bottom part of the barrel here. And we're thinking about tight supplies. The market's going to signal and try to get as much production brought in as possible. So for reference, I'll say if we had normal planting conditions last spring, we would have planted 179 million acres of corn and soybeans. How are we going to move that number? How far up is that number going to go? And you think about that 91 million acre question I asked you, that's 182, which is a bigger number than 179. So we got to increase all acreage going into these crops. And then how do we allocate those?
And I'm with you. My confidence level is probably a little over 50% on that as well, but it's going to be interesting. And I love how you set that up, acreage war versus acreage battle. It's really going to be interesting moving forward. Now, I want to look at the demand side of this equation with exports. We saw a weekly export report came out on Thursday. That seemed to be fairly strong, a little more bullish for soybeans than it was for corn and wheat. It was fairly neutral for corn and wheat from what I saw anyway, but thinking about the export levels, demand slowed up a little bit, but still remaining strong. Looking at Asian countries, looking at China, what are you seeing now with the demand picture for the next, you know, say 6 months ahead?
So it's the demand story is one of these interesting ones, right? So we've seen it come down a little bit, right? This week's WASDE report, it pulled it down. But what's interesting is demand is probably across the board. I haven't looked at the numbers right off the top of my head, but usage, let's talk about usage. Usage is stronger today than what they were forecasting back in May, right? And oh, by the way, we have a lot higher prices. And so this is that demand story. So we're still out there buying. So demand as an economist is how much is being purchased given this price level. And so we've ratcheted up the price and the usage is continuing well. I think in soybeans, we're getting to that tipping point where we're going to start, you know, quote unquote, rationing demand. There's any weather hiccups, and I think that's the thing on everyone's mind. South America weather hiccups, U.S. planting hiccups, U.S. growing season hiccups. There's a lot of chances for hiccups. The market's going to have to go in a demand rationing mode, and I think what's interesting to keep in mind is soybean prices and corn prices have gone up. We've seen demand back off a little bit, but not as much as everyone might have initially expected. There's been a big adjustment in prices. Demand, in my mind, has stayed pretty strong, or stronger than I would have expected thinking back, you know, 6 to 8 months ago. Side note here, I think the corn story on ethanol is still going to be challenging. There's a regulatory hurdle system that we got to get through here at the EPA, the court battles. And I think that this is sort of going to the story of we got to keep an eye on usage and demand. I think that as prices continue to get stronger, we're going to see some of that turning off, or in ethanol's case, the regulatory side. So we got to keep an eye on that, but I still think the story's overall been stronger and more positive than I would have initially expected.
A lot of things to look at as we move forward here the next few months, and a lot of things, again, like you mentioned, can ebb and flow and change, and we'll see what happens as we move forward. Let's talk livestock a little bit, David, and this hog market. I think for starters, we've kind of had some just resistance, like a brick wall, it seems, in this front month contract around $72 here. And we've really just been trading this range, haven't been able to break out of it. I know COVID obviously has been a big impact on livestock markets. But looking at hogs here, we got some new production numbers for both hogs and cattle. We'll get to cattle in a minute on the Tuesday reports. But looking at hogs, China's rebuilding their herd. Some folks, you know, question how quickly they'll rebuild it over there. Looking just overall at the hog picture here in the U.S., what are you seeing? Bright spots, low points, anything to really take away from that?
So I think one with the meat markets, you know, thinking about a Hall of Fame record, right? You got to take all this meat consumption data and meat pricing data and production data and put a giant asterisk next to 2020 and 2021. We're still working through the COVID on the consumer side. We're still working through COVID on the production side here in the U.S. China's working through its African swine fever. I was working on an article. We had African swine fever as a big question mark for 2020. Now, that wasn't the disease that everyone was paying attention to, but it's still out there. It's still looming. I think that's an uncertainty in all the markets still today, especially as the economy starts to reopen. But specifically to China, you know, we think of China sometimes as monolithic or as one entity. We got to be careful with that. So one of the things that's on my mind, and I think should be on the minds, it probably warrants a lot more work, is what was China's hog production like before African swine fever? So how much of that was in commercial facilities like we are used to here in the U.S.? And how much of that was in backyard type operations? So small scale type operations. And I think those small scale operations really weren't consuming corn, or especially not as much corn, but especially not as much soybeans as those commercial facilities. So how has the industry been hit in China? And now the next question is, how is that industry going to rebuild? And I think China, the Chinese market of hog production is going to shift more to this consumption side or this commercial side. So more of the feed, less of this backyard type small scale production. So I think that might, we got to think about all the implications for that on this usage side. And, you know, China's been out there using a lot of, buying a lot. So a lot of people are scratching their heads, including myself, like, okay, is that a stocks issue? Do we misrepresent stocks, or are they just using more than we would have expected? And so I think both of those are in play, but we just got to really think through that. And in the case of the hogs, we got to really think about what was hit and what's still out there today and what are they looking to grow? And I think it's this commercial side wasn't nearly as hit. And that's going to be where they rebound. Now, I could be wrong, and I hope maybe a future guest can shed light on this even more for you and your listeners, but I think we got to be careful with that story and how it actually plays out, especially looking down the road. I think China's going to use this situation as an opportunity to be more efficient and have more of their hog production and these high-scale commercial, very sophisticated facilities and multiple stories and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hog hotels, so to speak.
Right.
They are over there in China. On the cattle side, I would assume, you know, put the asterisk by cattle as well, 2020, 2021. But you know, to a large extent, it seemed like cattle markets ended on a fairly positive note for 2020 and are starting out a little bit weaker here in 21. But overall, we've kind of just been held in this trading range around, you know, 130 some on feeder cattle, you know, the 110s on the fat cattle market. Really, just looking at cattle, I would assume it's probably kind of the same story with everything involved, exports and everything here domestically. COVID's kind of the situation we're still working through there.
Yeah, I think again, another, like you said, asterisk beside all this, you know, one of the things I've been hearing from growers, and the data here sometimes is challenging, is cow prices, right? For cow-calf pairs or bred cows or bred heifers, those have seemed to really take a step up in the last 6 to 8 months. And so I think cow-calf producers, thinking about all the stimulus that we've had in the U.S. economy, cow-calf producers were able to participate in CFAP 1 and CFAP, I think CFAP 2 as well, but they were eligible for direct payments, which is something that cow-calf producers hadn't seen since 2014. So there's a lot of stimulus in this market. I think the market did better than we initially thought last summer. The supply chain hiccups weren't as consequential. They were consequential, but not as consequential as we might have thought at the beginning of the pandemic. And so there's a lot of enthusiasm out there among livestock, cow-calf producers especially. I think the hog producers are optimistic, not nearly as much, but a lot of enthusiasm for cow-calf producers, especially when they're looking at, you know, I think they're thinking about, hey, I should maybe retain some heifers or, you know, cull some of these cows and get my herd expanded. But again, I think, you know, one thing to keep in mind for cattle especially on the cow-calf side, is that drought that we've seen in the western parts of the plains, the southwest. That's cattle-producing country. They're going to be thinking about hay, and the strong corn and soybean prices aren't going to be good for hay production, and also limited production for the grasslands and the pastures and the hay fields. So I think the weather, I grew up in Kansas on a cow-calf farm, so I think we often overlook the drought or the dryness situation when it comes to those cow-calf producers. And that eventually worked its way into the feeder and the slaughter data.
Yeah, and that's going to be something we'll watch as well. And all great points you mentioned. We haven't seen a ton of livestock stress this winter, but you know, with some of that drought out there and the higher feed prices, it'll be interesting to see how the cattle markets shape up moving forward. And David, I know you guys have a lot of great information you have with Agricultural Economic Insights, AEI, and folks can find that online, can't they?
Yep, AEI.ag. We have a weekly article that we can send you. That's for free. We also have the premium side of the content. You know, those two questions I asked you earlier, you can go in there, share your forecast, read some more content about it, and see what all the other network users have been saying with their forecasts and what the consensus average is. So this acreage one is going to be a very interesting conversation for 2021.
Well, you can find it all online, AEI.ag. David Widmar, appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us here today on Market Talk. As always, we greatly enjoy your insights for sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jesse.
Again, that's David Widmar with Agricultural Economic Insights. You can learn more about them online at AEI.ag. And joining me now, very pleased to have on with me, Dr. Paul Sundberg with the Swine Health Information Center. Dr. Sundberg, great to chat with you today. How are you?
I'm well, Jesse. Thank you. It's good to be with you.
I appreciate you joining me. I always enjoy getting to catch up with you and talk about what is going on with swine health, not only here across the U.S., but across the world, and the great work the Swine Health Information Center does in helping to keep our swine healthy, for that matter. Looking at a few things, I know the 2020 progress report that is now out, that has been released, it's been accepted. Can you tell us a little bit about the report and maybe just some of the background on this report?
Sure. So the center, Swine Health Information Center, was formed in 2015 by a grant from the National Pork Board. And within that contract for that grant, it includes the yearly update of progress. As the Pork Board does grants, if it's multiple years, then you need to give them a report that shows that you've made progress over the years that you've had it. So this was the fifth one of the series that we've had, the most recent, 2020. And the Pork Board just met yesterday. I went over that progress report with them, and they accepted it. So it'll be posted on the swinehealth.org website today, I believe, very shortly, if not today, but I expect even today because of the interest that there is in that.
Well, let's talk about that 2020 progress report a little more in depth. And I know it's a fairly lengthy report, Dr. Sundberg, but what are some of the highlights and some of the takeaways from that report?
Yeah, so the center is charged with three things. In our mission statement, there's three things. One is monitoring for diseases around the world, including in the U.S. The second is targeted research. And the third is analysis of data and feeding back to the industry results from data analysis of health information in the U.S. So we can go through those real quickly. The monitoring part for diseases, we conduct international monitoring and report that every month. We work with the veterinary diagnostic labs across the country in the U.S. to monitor for diseases in the veterinary diagnostic lab submissions and compile that information and report that out monthly as well. So those two things are big monitoring projects for us. They've been very successful. They're part of our newsletter, and they go out monthly and are on the website as well. In the targeted research area, that's a spot where we could talk quite a while, because in the targeted research area, we've really got a lot done in 2020. The targeted research includes African swine fever and research in Vietnam, the practical finding out the practical pieces about management and control in a country that's actually having the outbreak rather than doing it in a laboratory. We've done work on PERS and PERS biosecurity. We've done work on national risk assessment, looking at the national picture for the pork industry, all the way from imports of food and pigs and products and anything that comes into the industry to domestic things like marketing and pig movement. We've commissioned that national biosecurity review. That's commissioned. That isn't quite done yet, but it's a big step toward preventing disease. One more thing that we did that I think that's going to help us prevent disease, especially with African swine fever, is we were able to update the research on the half-life of African swine fever in different feed ingredients, and that gives us a new holding time for allowing that virus to degrade before it gets into the pigs, and so it lessens the risk of ASF. Finally, the analysis part. The Morrison Swine Health Monitoring Project is a project that is maintained by the University of Minnesota. It has more than half of the sows in the country that are sharing information and providing weekly updates on farm statuses. We've used that to do an analysis of PED outbreaks. And looking back at PED, so what we've ended up with is a model that we can now predict a PED outbreak on a farm 2 weeks ahead of time before it gets there. Imagine that. We can, as a my career as a veterinarian has too much been about chasing diseases. Now, with this type of analysis, we can predict that a disease is going to happen on a farm 2 weeks from now, so we can stop it from happening. Big step forward.
A lot of big steps forward. Such great research and insights from the Swine Health Information Center with the 2020 Progress Report. Dr. Sundberg, I'd like to talk a little more about African swine fever. We've been studying this and following this for quite some time now, and I know you guys have been doing a lot of work on this, and you mentioned the Vietnam research, and you know, we look at China. We've heard about a lot of outbreaks there. We keep hearing that they're rebuilding their hog herd rather quickly. What is maybe a, kind of an update on African swine fever globally, especially in those Asian countries?
Sure. Well, let's go to Asian countries first, and then we'll go to Eastern Europe. The Asian countries and China and Southeast Asia, they are trying to rebuild their herds. So that's a big priority for them. And they're having some successes with that because primarily what's happened with the ASF outbreak, any success around that has been success in consolidation, and that consolidation puts the pigs on farms that have focus on biosecurity. Their big issue initially was biosecurity, and that consolidation has enabled them to do a better job in biosecurity and keep ASF off the farms. That being said, they're still a long ways away from repopulation to the spot that they were. So there's a lot of work that's going to be done there. There's a lot of lessons that we're going to be watching and we're going to be learning from that whole effort. Repopulation is underway. It's a tough process for them, and they've got a lot of work yet to do. As far as Eastern Europe goes, there's now a fourth center in Germany where feral pigs have moved from Poland into Eastern Germany. So far in Germany, that virus is still in the feral pigs, and they're working on trying to eliminate it, but that's going to be a very hard row to hoe as well. They have a very dense population of feral pigs, and once ASF gets in there, it's going to be difficult to get it out, and it's going to remain a threat for their commercial production.
Well, luckily, ASF has not reached the U.S., and all this great research and work is helping us to better understand the disease and combat it if it ever does reach the United States. I know, looking here at home in the U.S., we've heard more rumblings about PERS outbreaks, especially parts of North Carolina and then towards the Midwest, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota. Can you share any details about that and maybe some of the things you're hearing with PERS?
Yeah, there is this is PERS season, number one. So, yes, there's going to be PERS outbreaks. PERS goes through a seasonal pattern. During the summer, it's at a low. It increases during the fall and winter when the barns are shut up and the ventilation systems are a challenge. So it's not unsurprising that there are PERS outbreaks that are happening. However, there is a strain of PERS right now that is going in Minnesota, especially Minnesota, Iowa, the Midwest, that is, it's not a new strain, but it's causing new problems. And it's being more pathogenic than it had been previously. It's called a 1.4.4. And we've known about it for a long time, but it's one that's become prominent in the Midwest this season. There's just going to have a few meetings about it. We may be hearing more about that in the coming weeks, helping to report some more about the 1.4.4 strain going on in the Midwest right now.
Well, again, I think with any disease, it comes back to having a great on-farm biosecurity plan. And I know that all the research the Swine Health Information Center is doing can help farmers and growers here in the U.S. to better understand and better form that on-farm biosecurity plan, Dr. Sundberg.
Yeah, that's an issue of working with your veterinarian, number one, of course. But the second thing, one of the research projects that we had last year in 2020 that I have yet to have the final report on, but we're going to be publishing interim reports to try to help with just that issue. It looked at PERS outbreaks in the Midwest. It analyzed PERS outbreaks in the Midwest and their biosecurity. And that will help us to prioritize biosecurity procedures and protocols that are PERS specific. What are the top three things you should be doing to try to prevent PERS outbreaks on your farms, that kind of prioritization. That information is not yet totally available, but within the next week or two, I expect that that'll be coming out.
Well, Dr. Sundberg, it's always great to chat with you. Any other final things you wish to share today?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we've got to emphasize about the Swine Health Information Center and the pork industry itself in the U.S. is a collaboration that goes on between SHIC, between the National Pork Board, the National Pork Producers Council, the American Association of Swine Veterinarians, and our efforts as well to work with USDA and state animal health officials. This issue of swine health, prevention of PERS, prevention of ASF, responding to emerging diseases, it's not just a one entity thing. It's everybody working together. And that's something that's been the most rewarding experience in the Swine Health Information Center during the last 5 years.
Well, you can read the full 2020 progress report and find out more by going to swinehealth.org. Dr. Paul Sundberg with the Swine Health Information Center, always appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me today.
It's always a pleasure to visit with you, Jesse. Thanks.
Again, that's Dr. Paul Sundberg with the Swine Health Information Center joining us here today on Market Talk. And big thanks again to Dr. Sundberg as well as to David Widmar joining us early in the program to talk about the markets here on the show for this Friday, January 15th. What a week it's been, a very busy week. We thank you for taking the time to join us here on Market Talk each day or catching up on programs that you have missed. You can do all of that at markettalkag.com. Find us Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and so many more. And you can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Market Talk Ag, or one of our many great radio affiliates across the country. You can find that list online as well at markettalkag.com. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, wishing you a great afternoon and have a good weekend.